Welcome back to State of Belief Radio. I'm Welton Gaddy. We live in a world where it often seems impossible to get away from news of religion-based conflict and even violence. Reducing such conflict can feel even more difficult. And those of us working for interreligious understanding and cooperation are too often labeled as naive and uninformed. That's one reason that a new book calling for interreligious action is nothing less than a mandate for Christians caught my eye. The book is titled, Why Did Jesus, Moses, the Buddha, and Muhammad Cross the Road? Christian Identity in a Multi-Faith World, and its author, Brian McLaren, is on the phone. Brian, welcome.
Thanks. Great to be with you again, Wilson.
Well, let's start with the book's title. As opposed to the old joke about the chicken, that you actually envision these four, Muhammad, the Buddha, Moses, and Jesus crossing the road of division to get to each other? Is that it?
I think that's a great way to envision it, yes. One of the most beloved parables that Jesus told was the story of the Good Samaritan. In the story of the Good Samaritan, everybody crosses the road. Either they cross the road to get away from someone who's different than they are, or they cross the road to get towards someone who's different. This, to me, is one of the great challenges for all of us who share any kind of religious identity, but I'm especially thinking of myself as a Christian and my fellow Christian.
Am I correct in assuming that you delegate this actual crossing of the road to the followers of these great people without waiting for their leaders to do so?
Well, of course, since the founders of our different religions either live far distant from one another in space or time, we never can actually see what would happen if they got together and took a walk down the road or sat down for a cup of tea or whatever. But I think we can imagine it, because if those of us who study these great leaders' lives, we know how they treated people. And so I think from their example, we can drive some inspiration that makes it very different to follow our leaders rather than following our fellow followers.
Yeah, that's a great point. Well, your book couldn't be more timely. The most recent turmoil that we've seen in the Middle East just screams about the need for this kind of book. I noticed the release date was September 11, 2012, and I'm wondering, when you saw the headlines on September 11th, 2012, what went through your mind?
Well, it was heartbreaking to see the story of a film that is nothing short of base and disgusting, that was obviously intended as provocation and insult to the Muslim people by depicting Muhammad in such a despicable way. And then to see violence erupting in response, boy, at some point you start to realize something that was one of my great discoveries in actually writing this book, and that is that it's not really our religious differences that are causing trouble. It's a religious similarity. It's a characteristic that many sectors of all of our religions have in common, and that is the tendency to build the identity of us in opposition to or hostility toward the identity of them. Mm. And it's strange, isn't it, that when religions become vicious, they resemble one another all the more. The specifics of their doctrinal distinctives or their other cultic or ritual distinctives seem rather insignificant in comparison with the dedication to violence and fear and prejudice and so on.
Oh, that's a great insight. Your book builds on a very simple premise, essentially, what would Jesus do with respect to the fathers of the other great religions? I'd like for you to expand on that very simple principle.
Sure. Well, as someone who is a deeply committed Christian and who not only studies Christ and believes in him, but I really love him, one of the things I know in my study of Jesus in the four Gospels is this. He was a keen judge of human character. Now, when I say judge, I don't mean judge like someone who likes to assess and find fault and condemn. He's almost the opposite kind of judge. He's the kind of person who sees in someone, whatever little seed of faith is there, whatever spark of the image of God is there, Jesus sees it and fans the flame. So you have just stories from the Gospels. Peter's a great example. I mean, a lot of people would have looked at Peter and saw a kind of a pious, blowhard fisherman, and Jesus saw beneath that and saw the potential of real leadership. Or you think of Jesus encountering a Samaritan woman who everyone else just saw. First, they saw her through the eyes of racial and religious prejudice, but also the people who knew her knew that she had a pretty sordid sexual past. Yet, Jesus saw her as a person of value, willing to engage with her. In story after story in the Gospels, people are brought before Jesus who everyone else condemns or rejects, and Jesus stands with them and affirms something in them. Knowing that about Jesus, I just can't help but think that if the Buddha or Muhammad or obviously Jesus' own forefather Moses, if they'd been brought before him, they would have felt in his presence that they were seen with the most compassionate and loving eyes that they'd ever been seen with. You know, and I think if you know anything about the Buddha or Muhammad or Moses, you'd have reason to say that they would also encounter one another mm-hmm. with respect and interest rather than the kind of knee-jerk reaction that is so common among religious people today.
I wonder if you have encountered something that I've been noticing more and more lately, that when you are speaking from the Gospels and you're pointing to Jesus as a good example for how to do interreligious work and peace work specifically, I've got a lot of people now saying to me, oh, Jesus never really did intend that we obey him. His ethic is really not for today. He never expected us in our kind of world to live like that. You hear that?
Oh, I do. In fact, there's a certain sector of conservative Christian thought called dispensationalism that says that the teaching of Jesus is actually not intended for today. And then there are others who dispense with the teachings of Jesus by saying their only purpose is to help us see what terrible sinners we are so that we'll need another set of doctrines to bring us relief from our guilt. If that's the case, then Jesus made a pretty big mistake by using that command, follow me, because follow me means imitate me, learn from me, follow my example.
Right.
And if that's the case, the Holy Spirit made a big mistake in inspiring Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, because all he really needed to give us was the book of Romans. And even that book, I think, is grossly misinterpreted when people read it that way.
So, absolutely.
But it is common. And I think this is why I imagine people like you and me and many others are willing to stick our necks out, because we realize that the Christian faith really is at a crossroads in history in many ways, in our part of the world at any rate,
yes.
Because the Christian faith has to decide whether it really wants to be a faith that develops Christ-like people and that encourages Christ-like love and that really does see Jesus as the one we're to follow and whose image is one that we want to be transformed into.
In your new book, Why Did Jesus, Moses, the Buddha, and Muhammad Cross the Road, Christian Identity in a Multi-Faith World, you challenge what's probably the number one and misguided, if you ask me, criticism of interfaith activism, and that is that in the search for common ground, one ends up with a diluted broth of the most innocuous of tenets and beliefs. You write that a strong Christian identity actually fosters, even demands, effective interreligious engagement. Is that a fair statement?
Yes, it is. And it's very understandable why some people would feel that the only way to reduce religious hostility is to water the whole thing down. You know, if you made a soup or a stew and you put in way too much red pepper, you can't cool the thing down unless you water it down.
Yeah.
But the watering down of faith produces all kinds of unhelpful consequences of its own, one of which, an obvious one, is if you water down your faith so that it doesn't really mean that much anymore, it's just a kind of vague moral niceness, which I think is what a lot of people perceive certain elements of the faith to be, then your kids grow up and they think, why have any kind of commitment to that faith at all? It's just not that big a deal.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if that happens, then within a few generations, the only people left holding faith are the people holding a strong and hostile faith. And so I think this is why we have to rediscover a new vision of our faith. I call it a reformulation of our faith that doesn't just throw out our doctrines, but rather acknowledges the way some of our doctrines have been used for great harm and rediscovers them as healing teachings, as teachings that actually have the power to heal the very wounds that have been inflicted in the name of God, in the name of religion. And that, to me, is a more vibrant faith. One way to say it is, if I see a neighbor who is a person of another race, another faith, another political party, another socioeconomic background, if I'm just operating on the old law of familiarity, that birds of a feather fly together, I'll stay away from that person. But if I have really become a follower of Jesus, then I will cross the road toward that person. I'll be drawn toward that person. And that, to me, becomes an expression of my faith, not a watering down of it in any way.
Dr. Brian McLaren is the author of over a dozen books. His latest, just out from Jericho Books, is titled, Why Did Jesus, Moses, the Buddha, and Muhammad Cross the Road? Christian Identity in a Multifaith World. Dr. McLaren, thank you for what you're doing, and thank you for being with us today on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you so much for having me.